Hello, this is David Mack, and I am always plagued with a lot of questions and needing answers, and even when I am able to answer my own questions, I'm not satisfied. Simply because of my imperfections, I question even what I answer myself. However, we do have access as an audience to a very, very, very deep thinker, a philosopher, a person that's pondered a lot of things, and they qualified to in the category of some of our good thinkers, including Socrates and Plato. Peter is an individual that we are blessed to have with us today. He's practiced self-realization meditation since his early years. He lives a fast-paced Western-style life with interests ranging from quantum physics to business, strategy, jazz, and modern art. Peter has a book, too, that's a very, very hot seller that I think that should be in the household of everyone's household. And we're very, very, very much blessed to have Peter with us today. And I'm sure that everyone is interested in some information that's still out there that we haven't discussed. There's a giant ego, a three-letter word that's huge, me, myself, and I. That's something that I guess we all possess, an ego. Would you say that everyone has an ego?
Yeah, we have either small or big ego, but each and every one of us has an ego.
Okay. I just want to read an excerpt here. It says, our own standing point is very important to us. We regard it as right because it is so real to us. We have no doubt. Therefore, it is the truth. And because it is so obvious, there cannot be any possibilities of misunderstandings by other people. They simply cannot ignore it and be so blind as not to see simple facts that even we can understand. But they do not act accordingly, and their behavior is so much beyond our belief that we cannot stand it. It's too much, and we need to do something about it. Can you comment on that? I thought that was very interesting. It was very thought-provoking.
Yeah, well, it's just see the world around you. We talk. We use a lot of words. We use symbols, and these words are just symbols. And they're not precise. They don't really actually tell anything. It's from your experience you try to express something. And you're using your own experience and background and history to tell some other person something else. And when, let's take an example. I pick up a word like a chair. What kind of mental image do you have about chair? Each and everyone has a different, you know, definition for chair. And that's the point. The words we are using are not precise. And this leads to the misunderstanding that when we're talking and someone is listening what we're saying, we think that what we are delivering to them, they are receiving exactly how we are telling it to the other person. And this same goes to the sort of the perception we're having from the surrounding world. We take it in as we see it. It's not how it is there. It is only how we see it. And we only see those things we already know. We do not see those things we do nothing about. So different people pick up different things and they see different things from the same situation. And for that reason, each and every action you do and everything you do is really subjective to your own reality. And for that reason, it's very easy and obvious that not everyone is agreeing what you're doing and how you see the world and what do you think and how do you think about different items and topics.
Okay, now let me ask you a question then. Would you say even the word itself, ego, does that denote selfishness? Is there any kinship at all?
Well, ego can be defined so many ways. There's a psychology way of defining ego like Jung and Freud and then more sort of a layman terms. Well, I would just simply say that it's sort of the personality. It's in you, in your mind, something that is really powered on yourself. So because it's thinking about itself and having sort of the subjective point of view, yes, I think it is selfish in a way. But the selfishness is not necessarily negative thing either. It's only how do you see it and how do you take it and you know, if we do not think about ourselves at all, life becomes very miserable. So we cannot be happy if we are not thinking ourselves as well. But it doesn't mean that we're just only thinking about ourselves. But we have to be happy. We have to be content. We have to be in peace with ourselves, and then we can help other people, and then we have more to contribute. But to your question, yes, I think ego is selfish, but it's role to be selfish, and it's our task then to balance it so that, you know, it's taking care of ourselves, but, you know, we also minding other people are being very, very compassionate, you know, for the people around us.
That's interesting. Well, good. Another statement here says, our thinking is full of us. Our thinking is full of us. Now, that can be thought and thought and thought and rethought. To someone, that might be simple. To me, that's very complex. Our thinking is full of us.
Yeah, your mind is only working when you think. And typically, well, just follow your thought patterns. Many times your mind is wrapped around you. What I do, how should I be, how I'm feeling. You know, it's always I. And it's seldom, you know, about other people and seeing and what's outside of yourself. So thinking typically is about yourself. And that's why it's so egocentric in a way. But once again, your mind and thinking only exist while you're thinking.
Well, that's good. Now, another thing is about worrying. Someone says if we that a huge percentage of what we worry about will never take place or come about at all. So we do a lot of wasting of our time worrying. So the statement is stop worrying. Why would that be necessary? Isn't that a part of a human makeup to worry, or is that relative? Well, I guess everything's relative, but what do you think of that?
Well, do you like to worry? Is it enjoyable? You get a lot of pleasure from worrying and, you know, being in the state of worriness. Or if you do not, you know, then maybe you just want to get rid of it. But what is worrying? Worrying is something that typically has to do with the future. You are contemplating and thinking and pondering about things to come. You don't know how those things are going to work out. And then you just make a lot of scenarios and you know, planning and just mulling around those actions or items, whatever you're just, you know, thinking about and worrying. So worrying is just something which happens right now and typically is forward looking, but you have no idea to know how the reality is gonna come unfold. And for that reason, also worrying is rather useless, because you would not worry if you would be certain about the outcomes or you're comfortable what's going to happen next. But since you're not so comfortable what's going to happen next, you try to figure out ways to reduce your stress and worrying by thinking about things and from your current knowledge and understanding. So you can only think about things you already know. And because you're worrying, it means that you do not see a way out of your worries. And therefore, it's sort of a catch-22, what's happening. You're thinking over and over again about the same things in your mind. So you're sort of recycling your thoughts. But that's a sort of a paradox. You cannot get out of your worries by yourself because you wouldn't worry in the first place. And therefore, I would say that stop worrying, because it doesn't really help you. What it does is that it blocks you. It blocks you from this moment, and many times you can do only so much about. You can obviously plan and be prepared for things, but if you tend to worry, what you can really do about it? You just stress yourself, and you're not living now. You might be whole day worrying about what's gonna happen tomorrow, how I'm gonna do this, or how I'm gonna cope with the situation there. And when you go to that situation, what typically happens is that, you know, it just happens exactly the different way whatever you thought about. It's just something, you know, which didn't happen exactly like you planned. So it's coming out of blue for you, and that's exactly how the life comes out. Change is the only constant. So you should not worry about the future, because you cannot know how it's gonna happen. And that, for that reason, is rather silly. And I would say that enjoy the moment and the future will take care of itself when you get there. But now live each and every moment what you have and appreciate them, because it might be that you don't need to worry about it at all. You might be dead tomorrow, and then you just be worrying today and haven't been basically living at all, and there's no next day to enjoy for you. So I would say just enjoy each and every moment you're having, and focus on the things you are in control, and just let go those things you're not in control. And future is something which is gonna take care of itself. You don't have to worry about it.
I like that. I like it. That makes sense. So it would definitely, based on what you just said, be necessary and also beneficial not to worry. I think there's some good therapy there also. That leads me to another thought here as far as who we are. Who am I? Who are we? Are we a collection of minerals and things that comes from the earth, and it's all put together, and the end results? That's who am I? Who are we?
Know yourself. That's the ancient wisdom from basically all the times being found from the different sources. And that's really the essence of the issue. And that's the question you have to ask yourself. And each and every one of us has to individually ask that, who am I? What is it that I am? And that's, I would say, the most important question in your life. Asking that question, well, you can obviously say that, you know, I'm this and this name, I'm Peter or whatever, but it's just a name, it's just a label for something, but you are not that label. So you have to go a bit more deeper than that. Then you may ask that, you know, what is it that consists of me? Is it just my limbs and arms and legs and tooth and head and brain or whatever, you know, these things? But most of these we can even replace. If you have a malfunction in your liver or something, you can get another one, you can replace it, but so it's not me. So it's what is it that really is me? And typically what you find is that it's your consciousness, it's your awareness of you aware of yourself. But where does that awareness reside? Where can you find it? Where is it? Is it in your brain? Well, just check it again. Maybe it's not in there. Is it in your thoughts? What are your thoughts? Are your thoughts yourself? But when you're quiet, you're still there. And if there's no thoughts in you, so maybe it's not there. Is it what you're getting in? Is it your sensor perception, what is getting in? Is that you? Maybe not. So when you're getting more deeper through that question, you start to really ponder and find some interesting things about yourself and your relationship to the world, and how you interact with the world, and who am I? When you know the answer for that question, I think you will know the questions, answers for a lot of other questions as well. And it's sort of a road that is pretty much never ending. You're getting a more deeper and deeper understanding of things, and the sooner you start, the more interesting your life becomes. And Who are we? Who am I? If you want to get my one answer for that one, it's energy. We are energy. But still, it doesn't, what is energy? And once again, it goes on and on.
Well, okay, that's true. We're energy but when the energy leaves, we're dead.
Well, we are still energy. You know, our body is the energy, but it doesn't actually answer the question.
So you're saying decomposition, that is a phase of energy too. After one is dead, then the body decomposes, so the energy is still involved in everything that exists.
Everything what is energy. It's just, you know, what we are is just pure energy, but it doesn't actually answer your question in a way that you want to get sort of satisfied answer. So that's the reason you have to do it yourself. But when you study physics, for example, you find that it's energy. It's just waves. It's just waves of energy in different patterns. It's basically just the fluctuation of energy. But it doesn't really sort of from the human perspective give the satisfied answer for you, and that's the reason you have to do it yourself, because there's no absolute truth in our reality. There's only subjective point of views that's coming even from the physics. So that's really why you, each and every one of us, has to ask the question ourselves and start to sort of experience and explore our reality, and do not take things as granted, because it's not really how we perceive the world that it is in reality how it is. And if you don't believe me, just check some physics books or start to read about biology or start to read about how our senses are working and how we actually, for example, perceive the pictures and sounds and all those things. And so how we really sort of build our three-dimensional reality and how our sort of senses are playing tricks on us.
You know, that's interesting. My sister has three names, her first name, her middle name, and her last name. And she wanted to change her first name, which was what everyone called her, because she was so abused as a child until she, the way she coped with that was to change her first name, and even all of her siblings and family members respect that. And we all refer to her now as a second name, which is a middle name. And the point is, that's the way she wants it, and she deals very well with that. But when someone calls her by her first name, she tends to go into a certain mode, and she doesn't like it, and she's very quick to tell you that her name is her middle name rather than the first. And it's an interesting thing about that. As you said, other people define us as we learn to be that whatever name they have given us. That is, so if she decided to disregard her first name, which is what she was called most of her childhood growing up life, and chose to put that aside and be referred to as her middle name, has she changed?
Well, the thing is that since we all build our own reality, and it's subjective, your reality is whatever you believe it is. So we attach to things, we cling on things. And well, just good example. You just ask that, you know, who you are from someone. Just pick a person from the street and ask who you are. Well, they state their name, and then they may state that, you know, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer or whatever, you know, shopkeeper or, you know, bus driver. And so they may attach to themselves to that sort of a job description. I am a bus driver, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, I'm a spouse, I'm a sister, I'm a brother, and there's a lot of labels, but those are labels, but is it what you are? You are sort of that type of a label of something. So many cases, and I think this is related to ego as well, we attach and cling to those sort of definitions or ideas we're having, the mental images we're having in our mind about certain things. So when someone calls us by some name, we are obviously we identified, we recognize ourselves by people because we used to be called that name. But is that name you, or is it just something that, you know, you just, it makes my life more easier and less complicated? So the attachments and those things are really defined by each and every one of us, and it's up to us to change as well. So if you don't like your name, obviously you can change the name. Or you can, what you can also do is that if you just think that it's too complicated to change the name, or just you don't want to do it, you can just change your perception and your attachment, clinging, and your emotional binding to that name and associations you're having for that name. And for example, in your case, the example you gave, I think it might be, it's nothing wrong with the name. Most likely, it's a very beautiful name, but it's only the emotions and the things what happened in the past that are sort of bringing up sort of negative emotions about situations and memories. So if you process those ones, then you might actually be very proud and, you know, just happy once again to use your name. So I think this might give us an idea that, you know, how we cling and associate and attach ourselves to those mental images called words, and how they have different meaning for us. Some are very neutral for us. Some have very sort of a strong feeling or emotional attachment to us. Well, just a good example. You hear from the radio good old song you heard maybe 20 years ago. How do you feel? Many times you can just, you know, pick a few songs and you remember the time and place and what happened there. And you know, each and every one, you know, hear the same song, but each and every one of us has a different relationship to that song. We have a different meaning for that one, different associations, what has been happening, and those are the experiences in the history and the past we've been having.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. You know, a color or a scent, an odor, or a a song, these types of things would trigger certain things in us that we recall. That's interesting. You know, on the same note of changing the name, there was a person that ran for office in Mississippi, the state of Mississippi, U.S., and he was a very clever person. He went to the courthouse and changed his name from whatever it was, and this is a true story, it was several years ago, from whatever his name was, he changed it to none of the above. And he ran for office, and it appeared on the roster when people voted what of the names were, and then they could check none of the above. And he won. He won the election. It's a true story. And people were outraged because they said it was unfair. But that was his legitimate name. He went to the courthouse and literally changed his name to none of the above, and that's how he won the election. They were saying, in essence, they didn't want anybody, but they didn't know that was a person's legitimate name. I thought it was rather, when I saw that, it was rather funny because the person was clever. He changed his name, so in the eyes of other people, he was none of the above, and that's how he won the election. It was a local office in a little town in Mississippi. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, well, that actually describes very well how we are sort of stuck to our mind, just a simple perception and understanding that we don't tend to see things differently. We are just sort of thinking that the things are all the time the same and nothing changes, and suddenly someone else is just figuring an alternative way of describing the word and having it for the different meaning. So it's not a bureaucratic term anymore, it's just your name. So I think this is just an illustration also that, you know, everything is in flux and in change, and it's just up to you to see the things a bit differently and have fun.
Well, on that note, again, as usual, you've given some interesting answers, and there's something that we can use in order to make us better persons. What I'm going to do is, again, ask the audience, suggest to the audience to get the book, Fragments of Reality, and this has to do with lots of questions and things we are confronted with in order to be better persons and to exist. So, and Peter's being the author of this book, this is why he's giving us these good answers, because he's already probed this and thought them over and made an excellent compilation in this book. My suggestion is that each household should have it for guidance and for help. But Peter, again, thanks again for your good answers, and we're looking forward to the other answers that you're very much so willing to give us.
Thank you, David. It's been so nice talking with you today, and I'm looking forward to next time.